time. The gospel reading today is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 24, beginning in verse 13. Now on the same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that have happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, who was named Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place here in these days?" He asked. He asked them, "What things?" they replied. "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was the prophet, mighty indeed, and the word before God and all the people. And now how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hope that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all of this, it is now the third day since these things have taken place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that he indeed had seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the woman had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.'"
I've never seen so many people out on walks in my entire life. I've been to a couple marches for causes that I believe in where we did get together in large numbers and we did ambulate in the same general direction. And we were maybe even shouting, "This is what democracy looks like together." So I'm familiar with that kind of group walking. I've also been to O's games and Nats games where there's a lot of walking when the game gets out and we have this sort of mutual agreement that we're all going to cooperate, we're all going to walk together, and it's all going to work out fine. But I have never seen so many people in neighborhoods sort of randomly out for a stroll. And of course, what is so surreal about it this time is that we're walking together, but we're walking far apart. When we first moved up to COVID DEFCON level 16, or whatever we are now, I was driving for my every 2 weeks trip to the grocery store to get the essentials. And I very nearly hit this lady who was walking in the middle of the road. And this was not my little neighborhood street. This was the road. And it took me a second to process that she was walking in the middle of the road because she thought that's safer in this environment than walking on the sidewalk where you might be too close to one another. A whole lot of us are walking. And if you have mobility impairments, maybe you're taking a turn on the porch or short drives in the car. And maybe we're walking to keep ourselves from going stir crazy in the house. We're out doing what we can because that's the easiest option that's available to us. Going for a walk to clear our head and maybe to get a break from the never-ending onslaught of reality in a time when the news seems to be so full of heavy things. In our scripture today, we have people going for a walk. We have Cleopas and friend walking on the road. Maybe they did it to have something to do, maybe to clear their heads on the road to Emmaus, just to talk about events of recent days, the ordinary sadness of what they had experienced on Good Friday, the latest batch of COVID numbers, the sad and solitary rhythms of the day. It doesn't feel like a happy stroll to me. It's the kind of walk where you mull over your problems and you don't really notice the flowers or the baby turtle on the grass by the sidewalk. A walk to Emmaus is often that kind of walk. And Jesus came near and walked with them. And here's the thing, they didn't know it was Jesus. And we're tempted to make fun of them. They seem dumber than a box of rocks in many respects. Oh, stranger, things are bad. We thought Jesus was the one to redeem Israel, but I guess all hope is lost. I mean, sure, there's some talk that the women couldn't find his body. There's a talk about a resurrection, but that's just the women. And everybody knows they're not credible. So I guess we're doomed. Woe is us. There's talk of resurrection, but of course, who would believe that? And so Jesus lays it all out for them, not just about Holy Week, but how the Hebrew prophets foresaw this and how God has been at work all along. But they still can't see that the one with them is Jesus. And we think we would never make that mistake. Except, of course, we do. We can get so caught up in the ordinariness of our days and the weight of our problems that we miss Jesus when he shows up. The risen Christ is really unpredictable, as it turns out. First, notice that Jesus came to the disciples right where they were. The disciples didn't set out looking for him. They're certainly not dressed in their Sunday best, heading off to church to pray. You know, I think that would be easier. Like, if Jesus only lived in the church house, in our case, the one on New Cut Road, then we would know where he was when we would go looking to find him. Well, we could make an appointment, say Sunday, 10 a.m., and we would go there, and there he would be. How predictable. A Jesus with office hours. That's the sort of Jesus I want. You know, I know exactly where you are, Jesus, and I can pretty much count on you not showing up anywhere else. Maybe when we get there, he would even be in a specific place in the building. Maybe on the cross, like a Catholic crucifix, or earnestly staring out from a picture on a wall in a Sunday school classroom. In the classrooms of my childhood, that Jesus was definitely in the picture on the wall. He was a little too blonde, a little too white, and a little too airbrushed, actually. But at least I knew where to go to find him if I wanted to. But that's not how our resurrected Jesus acts at all. Jesus comes to us. Walks with us on the path that we are already on. He's coming over uninvited, not even ringing the doorbell. He's showing up on the road. On the road, when we're on our way to somewhere, for Pete's sake. Jesus comes to us often as interruption. Jesus as the text I don't have time to read. How many times has Jesus come into our life, come into our day as an interruption? Something certainly not on our most important task list for the day, not in the places that we expect him to show up, but the places on the way. And when he comes to us like that, while we're on the way and on the road, it's so very hard to see him because he hangs out in our peripheral vision, on the borders, you know? When we're making our millionth lunch for our children, when we make the call to check on the neighbor, when we walk around the neighborhood, he shows up. Maybe in a chalk drawing that says, "You are stronger than you think," or in a flower rising defiantly through a sidewalk crack. After all, remember it was Jesus who told us, "When you feed the hungry and give water to the thirsty and visit the prisoner and clothe the naked and love the stranger, when you do this specifically to the least of these, you do it to me," he said. When we love the least of these, Jesus says, I know it looks like your infant, your toddler, your grandchild, your high school senior, but really it's me. It's not a masked stranger in the grocery store. It's me. The lonely, the overlooked, the lost, the broken, the discouraged. In other words, the people on every Zoom call I've ever been a part of. Love them, says Jesus, and when you do, you'll be loving me. He's so hard to see, and yet he's everywhere. I'm reminded of this study that was done at a seminary a long time ago now, 1973, and it was designed to look at the psychology of helping and life on the road and on the way. And subjects of the study were told that they had to do a certain task at a certain time. Some of them were told they had to give a talk on the Good Samaritan. Some of them were told that they had to give a talk on jobs at the seminary. So they prepared their talks and they showed up to give them. And at the last minute, each was told that the venue had changed and now they had to go across campus. So that meant that some of them were at risk for being late. And the variables in the study were that some were going to be really late and some had a few minutes, but they needed to get going. And the other variable was like, oh, the task waiting for them. And unbeknownst to them, the experimenters had an actor who was hired to slump in an alleyway on the road, on the pathway between them and the place they had to go to do the task. What they found was that people who were in a hurry did not stop to help the man, even if they were going to give a talk on the parable of the Good Samaritan. The guy who, against all odds, stops to help his neighbor in a ditch. The parable that Jesus tells in response to the lawyer's question, who is my neighbor? And the one who's the neighbor to the man in the ditch is the one who stops. Even when you're giving a talk on that, if you're in a hurry, you don't see him. This study was well before the distractions of smartphones and earbuds and COVID-19. I'm wondering if the people in a hurry even saw the guy in the alleyway. So often Jesus is easy to miss, even when he's right on our path or walking alongside of us. What if one of the gifts of this time is the chance to slow down and to notice and experience the presence of Jesus on the way? To give up on hurry because we don't have anywhere we have to go. And to look on the periphery at the people and places that in our normal life would be interruptions, people we would fail to notice. We will find Jesus there. Our dense disciples on the road are not encouraged when Jesus patiently explains all of the ways that Jesus said he would have to die and be raised, and this is exactly what's happening. That did not convince them. They didn't recognize Jesus in his theological explanations, his theological treatise, his brilliant Facebook argument designed to make them see the error of their thinking. But there was something in the exchange that led the disciples to go one step further toward Jesus. They're smart enough to ask this stranger to stay with them. There's something about the exchange that makes them ask him to stay. And by offering that hospitality, Jesus is able to show them who he is. Around the table, in the breaking of the bread, that's the time that they recognize him finally. Something about the way he takes the bread reminds them maybe of other times. Times when crowds were hungry and it looked like there was nothing to eat, and he took bread and he gave thanks for it and he broke the bread and he said, take, eat. and there was enough for everybody with baskets left over. Maybe at dinner that night, he took a towel and wrapped it around his waist. And maybe they remembered the time when he knelt and he washed their feet on that night before he was betrayed. And he said, "A new commandment I give you, love one another as I have loved you." And it was in that moment that they recognized him, present in the simple, ordinary things of living. And in that moment of recognition, he is gone again. I thought Jesus was busy during his earthly life, but after Easter, he's really hard to pin down. That's also a lot like our Jesus. It seems like the minute we recognize him, he's gone again, sending, leading, helping us grow, challenging us. He's always on the move. He's telling his disciples to go make disciples of all nations. He's telling people not to hold on to him, his resurrected body, not to build dwelling places for them to stay on the mountaintop. The resurrected Jesus is about breaking into our ordinary life and giving us peace. Peace that we can't get from a bottle or a cookie or a cigarette. Giving us peace, giving us purpose, and then sending us out somewhere where he will meet us, where he promises to be with us always, even to the end of the age. So often, like the disciples, we recognize Jesus after the fact. Not while we're walking with him, but after the fact. And sometimes we need help from someone else to be able to look back and see that it was Jesus. "Remember how our hearts burned within us," they said, after the fact. I have a couple friends who do this sort of service for me. They help me see Jesus. One in particular, if I call her to vent about some frustrating aspect of my work or my parenting, she has this way of reframing the whole thing and moving Jesus from the periphery, where honestly, sometimes I wish he would stay. Moving him from the periphery to the middle. This is a humbling sort of friend to have. When I vent to her about someone or something that I find objectively annoying, and I'm pretty sure the risen Christ would find them annoying too, she starts asking "I wonder" questions. Be careful if you have a friend like that. She says, "I wonder why they are the way that they are. I wonder what it might be like for them with their life in their shoes." She starts calling them things like God's person and saying, "I wonder why God has brought this person into your path, into your road, into your life. I bet it's so that you can learn to love them. I wonder how we might be able to see them the way that Jesus does." I really hate having friends that not only help me see Jesus when he shows up, but talking to those friends is a bit like running into Jesus too. So often we recognize Jesus when we take a risk to offer hospitality. Hospitality. Moving to online worship was a risky act of hospitality. But our leaders, our staff, our terrific tech team, they were very clear that we needed to offer this hospitality, not just for the people who come to church every week in our building, but for people who we've never maybe even met before. Maybe you're watching this and you and I have never even met, but you're a part of our church family. And maybe in the course of this worship, you might have an experience of the risen Christ. And in the relationship that we're building, we'll experience the risen Christ through people like you too. God so often takes our ordinary, faithful living and breathes something holy right into it, right when we least expect it. So this sermon starts a new worship series called Ordinary Miracles. And it's about stories like this one, where Jesus meets us on the road, on the way, and walks with us, comes near, and engages with us. It's a series about how Jesus is on the loose and at work in the ordinary people and places of our life, maybe especially in this season of pandemic. It's appropriate for a season when we've been banished from our buildings. In a way, they're like Jesus boxes, those buildings. So it's appropriate for this Easter season where our resurrected Jesus ain't in a building. He's everywhere. Even on the road, even on the way, walking with us, sitting beside us, asking what it is that keeps our minds so preoccupied, and staying with us if we invite him in, and often showing up even when we do not. If it feels like you're stuck in between places today, where you remember places that you once were, and there are places that you long to go, maybe it might feel like a long road to Emmaus this morning. A lot of walking and nowhere to get to. A lot of ruminating about disappointments, faults, failures, and fears. If that's where you are today, know that this is exactly the sort of place that Jesus tends to show up and come near and walk with. We may not recognize him right away, but he's there. Even on the Emmaus Road, even here, even now. Thanks be to God for such ordinary miracles. Amen.